Please come to order, and the Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Barbudo.
Here.
Berger.
Here.
Blake.
Here.
Bonner.
Here.
Brechtel. Brechtel. Brown.
Here.
Buchanan. Bird.
Here.
Kennedy.
Here.
Carson.
Here.
Childers.
Here.
Cohey.
Here.
Connolly.
Here.
Kraft.
Here.
Davison. Dirks,
here.
Edmonds,
here.
Esquivel,
here.
Gilmore,
here.
Gingery,
here.
Goggles,
here.
Hales,
here.
Hallinan, Hallinan, Hammonds,
here.
Harshman, Harshman, Harvey,
here.
Illaway,
here.
Yagi,
here.
Jorgensen,
here.
Landon,
here.
Lockhart, Lockhart, Lub. Lubno. Lubno. Madden. McKim. McComey. Mercer. Meyer. Miller. Millen. Moniz. Patton. Peasley. Peterson. Peterson. Philp. Korberg. Roscoe. Semlick. Shepperson. Stewart. Stubson. Teeters. Thompson, Throne, Wallace, Zwanitzer Dan, Zwanitzer Dave, Zwanitzer Dave.
Is he excused, Mr. Speaker?
He is excused. Yes.
Zwanitzer Dave excused, Mr. Speaker.
Here.
Harshman.
Here.
Where is he?
He's right here.
Okay. Lubno. Lubno. Lubno excused. 58 present, 2 excused.
Prayer today is again by Pastor Robert Schmidt, representing St. Paul's Lutheran Church. Pastor Schmidt.
Let us pray. Creator and Redeemer, we thank you so much for this great place we call Wyoming. We pray that you give us the wisdom and the strength to sift through the bills that need to be done. We ask for your provincial care, that you be with us as we look to this great state. We ask for the wisdom to do what is good for the people in this state. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible,
with liberty and justice for all. Thank you.
Thank you.
The doctor of the day is Dr. Douglas Bell from Cheyenne. Greetings, Dr. Bell. Thanks for being here. Journal Committee report.
Mr. Speaker, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of February 3, 2009 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Signed, Representative Barbuto.
Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 73, respectfully reports same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Begbie, Barbuto, Kennedy, Gingrey, Mercer, Patton, Peasley, Quarburg, Throne. Signed, Representative Gingrey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Joint Resolution 17, respectfully reports same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Begbie, Kennedy, Mercer, Peasley, Quarburg. No, Barbuto, Gingrey, Patton, Throne. Signed, Representative Gingrey, Chairman.
We are at that order of business of bills on second reading. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 41.
House Bill 41, introduced by Representative Dave Zwanitzer, an act relating to public assistance programs cremation expenses.
House Bill 41 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 42.
House Bill 42, introduced by Representative Dave Zwanitzer, an act relating to burials and cremations and arrangements.
House Bill 42 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 54.
House Bill 54, introduced by the Labor Committee, an act relating to the Workers' Compensation Act.
House Bill 54 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Madam Majority Whip, could you come forward, please? The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 127.
House Bill 127, introduced by the Management Council, an act relating to general revisions of laws.
House Bill 127, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 130.
House Bill 130, introduced by Representative Illaway, an act relating to state parks and cultural resources regarding matching account.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Majority Whip. I move second reading amendment number one to House Bill 130. This amends the Committee of the Whole amendment that we passed yesterday that unfortunately I don't have with me, but that, what that amendment did was insert page 3 at line 5. Thank you very much. After donor, insert in concert with the goals of the department relative to the 2007 operations plan of the department as periodically updated. I want to strike the words year 2007 and insert then current. So it would read, in concert with the goals of the department relative to the then current operations plan of the department as periodically updated. The last plan is a 2007 plan, but it has been periodically updated. And I think it's more appropriate to simply put some general language in the statute about the then current plan rather than a specific year, because then we wouldn't have to change it in the future.
Chairman Illaway, for your first time.
Thank you, Madam Majority Whip. This is a very friendly amendment from our good speaker, so I would urge its adoption.
Anyone else for their first time? Anyone else for their second time? Are we ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 130, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no. Second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 130 has been adopted. House Bill 130 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered.
Next bill for consideration is House Bill 174.
House Bill 174, introduced by Representative Yagi, an act relating to the Hathaway Student Scholarship Program.
House Bill 174 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for consideration is House Bill 204.
House Bill 204, introduced by Representative Miller, an act relating to taxation and revenue, excess tax collections.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I move second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 204, and will explain the reasons that I would like to do this. This strikes the standing committee amendment from yesterday that changed the language on line 2, page 12. Line 2, line 12. Where it says amount required to complete the project, and it put in authorized to complete the project, and it did the same thing on line page 4, line 22. And my concern was with this, as our statutes already require that we have, if you're going to have one of these capital facility optional sales taxes, that there's a minimum of 5% contingency fund that you have to have set aside, and you could ask for more. And in today's climate of inflation and deflation and everything going back and forth, if you reached just the authorized amount and you had an overrun on the project bids because of the way things were, how would you build a project and yet you've already authorized the collection of the tax? And I thought the real concern here was the fact that we're collecting money and the cutoff date was something that we wanted to do. We wanted to get at cutting off the date that the money could be collected so we didn't have to go another whole quarter. And in the most recent case, like in our county, it was $3 million more was collected than what was actually authorized and stated on the balance, on the ballot. And yet here we collected $3 million more, and I kind of thought that was what we were trying to get after. And so the rest of the language in here I'm very comfortable with, where it authorizes the treasurer to hold these monies, or if it was a city, that they'd hold the money, and after 5 years the money could be used for other things. But I just was a little uncomfortable with that wording, and thought I'd bring it to the body's attention and see what they thought.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I urge the committee or the body not to approve this amendment at this point. We're going to have to come back with moving some of this amendment into different sections, and I would urge the bringer of this amendment to bring the amendment on second, third reading after we get this language straightened out. I understand what he's doing. I'm not for sure it solves the problem we're going. Actually, it kind of eliminates the problem we're going after. It allows them to collect in excess of what they put before the voters still. So, but anyway, whether you want to approve it or not approve it, wait until third reading on second amendment on third reading. He can bring the same bill then, and it'll read in correctly with the new language we're getting here and getting it moved to the next section. So whether you agree with the amendment or disagree, please reject it at this point and bring it on third.
Anyone else for their first time? And for their second time, Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In light of the information I just heard, I withdraw the amendment.
Second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 204 is withdrawn. House Bill 204 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The last bill for our consideration is House Bill 250.
House Bill 250, introduced by Representative Muniz, an act relating to municipal fire chiefs after end of term.
House Bill 250 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered.
Speaker.
Representative Patterson, you may have privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have some special guests with us here today up in the South Gallery. The Wyoming Retired Education Personnel, which represents nearly 10,000 retirees. Up here joining us is Emma Jo Spiegelberg from Laramie, Chuck Curtis, who is the Vice President from Bighorn, Norm Brock is a treasurer from Laramie, unable to join us, Mary Lou Derby is from Lander, Glenn Reinick, there's a membership chair from Torrington, Dwayne Tremblay, executive director from Cheyenne, and we'll also mention Ann Curtis, who's the secretary, who's not present. Won't you please welcome to the House right up here.
Welcome to the House of Representatives. Nice to see you today.
Mr. Speaker.
Chairman Illaway, you may have privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This afternoon at noon, and one of the reasons I want to do this now is because we get so much mail on our desks, you will receive a brochure that will look like this, and it talks about the Wyoming State Blue Book. The Wyoming State Blue Book is a pretty good history. It's a comprehensive guide to Wyoming history and government, and there are essential reference books for federal, state, county, and city governments and so forth. Included in the volumes are historical timelines, biographies of elected officials, election results, and so forth. Anyway, the Wyoming State Archives will be selling the Wyoming State Blue Book in the Capitol Rotunda tomorrow, Thursday, February 5th. And the staff will be on hand from 8 to 10 in the morning and again from noon until 2. Any legislators wishing to purchase a blue book are encouraged to do so tomorrow. This was the blue book, volume 1, has, just to tell you a little bit about it, includes the acquisition of land, territory, years, and statehood. It goes up to 1890. Volume 2 is 1890 to 1943. Volume 3 is 1943 to 74. Volume 4 went from 1974 to 1990. It includes sections on government, education, economy, culture, and the Wind River Reservation. The newest volume is Volume 5, and this was something that Legislative Facilities Committee thought was important. So the new Volume 5 is 1990 to 2007. Generally, they're done every 10 years or in that vicinity. It had not been done for some time, well, since 1990. It's a good publication. It was written by Dr. Phil Roberts from the University of Wyoming. It's got a lot of history on the legislature, and then if anybody knows Phil Roberts, it is a good history of Wyoming from 1990 to 2007. Some of us use the blue books. I know the speaker used the blue book early in the session. I've used it. I've got all five volumes. Anyway, in addition to having the newest blue book, which is volume 5 available, State Archives will also offer previous versions, volumes 1 through 4, for purchase. Each volume is $25. A total set, volumes 1 through 5, is $75. So that's a pretty good deal. Since each volume is, if you purchase them separate, is $25, that would be $125. And if you want, all five volumes are also available on a CD for $35. So that will be, those folks will be in the rotunda tomorrow from 8 to 10 and from noon till 2. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. Representative Davison, you may have privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's not very often that we have someone all the way from Kemmer, but we have Les Vasey with us from Kemmer today. He's down here working on some bills. I hope you'll all give him a good welcome.
It's always a pleasure to have people here from Kemmer. Nice to see you, Les. We're at that order of business of bills on third reading and final passage consent list. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the third reading consent list consisting of House Bills 6, 39, 61, 75, 104, 134, 173, 180, and 285.
Is there anyone who would like to withdraw a bill from the consent list? Seeing none, would the reading clerk please read the consent list enactment?
House Bill 6, introduced by the Travel Committee, an act relating to game and fish regarding trapping, be enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 39, introduced by local government, COHE, an act relating to administration of government population determinations, use of federal census, be enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 61, introduced by the Management Council, an act relating to revision of inadvertent errors, the revisor's bill, be enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 75, introduced by Representative Brown, an act relating to subdivisions regarding water supply study, be enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 104, introduced by Representative Lebno, an act relating to election, special district election, polling place requirements, be enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 134, introduced by the Select Natural Resources Committee Childers, an act relating to Wyoming Wildlife and Natural Resource Funding Act, be enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 173, introduced by Representative McKim, an act relating to the Wyoming Teacher Shortage Loan Repayment Program, be enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 180, introduced by Representative Miller, an act relating to public transit funding account, be enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 285, introduced by Representative Gingrey, an act relating to crimes and offenses mandatory minimum sentences for sexual abuse of a minor, be enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the House? The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bagby.
Aye.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger. Berger?
Aye.
Blake?
Aye.
Bonner?
Aye.
Brechtel?
Aye.
Brown?
Aye.
Buchanan?
Aye.
Byrd?
Aye.
Kennedy?
Aye.
Carson?
Aye.
Childers?
Aye.
Cohey?
Aye.
Connolly?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Davison?
Aye.
Dirks?
Aye.
Edmonds?
Aye.
Esquivel?
Aye.
Gilmore?
Aye.
Gingery?
Aye.
Goggles?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye.
Hallinan? Hammonds.
Aye.
Harshman. Harshman. Harvey.
Aye.
Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Jorgensen.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Lebno.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
McComey.
Aye.
Mercer.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Millen.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Peasley.
Pedersen,
Peterson,
aye.
Philp,
aye.
Korberg,
aye.
Roscoe,
aye.
Semlich,
aye.
Shepperson,
aye.
Stewart,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Thompson,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Wallace,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dan,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dave excused, Mr. Speaker,
aye.
Harshman, Harshman, Harshman excused. I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 58 ayes, 2 excused. As to House Bill 6, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 58 ayes, 2 excused. As to House Bill 39, are there any changes? Dirks, aye to no. Lebno, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 56 ayes, 2 noes, 2 excused. As to House Bill 61, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 58 aye, 2 excused. As to House Bill 75, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 58 ayes, 2 excused. As to House Bill 104, are there any changes? Hales? Aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 57 aye, 1 no, 2 excused. As to House Bill 134, are there any changes? Hammonds, conflict. Semlick, aye to no. Teeters, aye to no. Brechtel, aye to no. Mercer, aye to no. Are there any other changes? Harshman? Harshman, excused to aye. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 54 ayes, 4 noes, 1 excused, 1 conflict. As to House Bill 173, are there any changes? Madden? Aye. To no. Mr. Speaker?
Representative Harshman, you're excused on the consent list. If you would like to change that, please do so on each bill.
Harshman? Harshman, aye. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 58 ayes, 1 no, 1 excused. As to House Bill 180, are there any changes? Harshman? Harshman, excused to aye. Hallinan, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 58 ayes, 1 no, 1 excused. As to House Bill 285, are there any changes? Harshman? Harshman, excused to aye. Wallace, aye to no. Hallinan, aye to no. Brechtel, aye to no. Dirks, aye to no. Mercer, aye to no. Peasley, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 53 ayes, 6 noes, 1 excused.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Bill 6, 39, 61, 75, 104, 134, 173, 180, and 285 have passed the House. Mr. Speaker, pro tem, please.
Here, right? We're at that order of business. Bills on third reading and final passage. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 68.
House Bill 68, introduced by the Revenue Committee, an act relating to taxation and revenue regarding property tax homestead exemption, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Pro Tem, I move third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 68. Ladies and gentlemen, what this does is take out the requirement that anyone who would receive this credit would need to be domiciled in Wyoming for at least 3 years. The fiscal note on this bill is profiled as if there were no residency requirement. I don't know why there is a residency requirement in the bill. The only requirement that would be left if the residency were deleted would be that it be your primary residence. If we took that out, this bill would be about $50 million for every residence in Wyoming, as near as I can tell. But this amendment would simply take out that three-year domicile. I don't see any reason for it. We've got a similar one like that as it relates to the veterans exemption, and it's really difficult to explain to a constituent why they have to be a resident of the state for a number of years to receive that exemption. I just don't think it's needed at all.
Chairman Anderson.
Thank you. I personally be neutral on this. So what we discussed is that those people who have bought a house in the last 3 years knew what the price and what the property tax was. The administration of it will be much more difficult when somebody has to verify whether they're a three-year resident or not. I think that's in favor of the amendment in that aspect. And I'm told by the fiscal impact, they had no way of knowing how many people had bought a house in the last 3 years, and so they didn't figure that in, and the fiscal impact would be essentially the same. They just said that's a cushion for us if we have it in there. So I guess I would really favor the amendment just because make the administration of it that much easier.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I guess this amendment doesn't really make it or break it one way or the other. Just to give you some background, if you look at other states that have a homestead exemption, it's not uncommon at all that there is some residency requirement. In fact, the very term homestead exemption, the term homestead implies some degree of longevity. And some states will have a 5-year, some will have a 10-year. We decided among ourselves in committee that we have kind of a mobile society in this state, so we set it low at 3 years. You know, I would concede that it does make it a little easier to administer if you don't have the requirement in there. But I guess I don't know what the fiscal impact would be if we add this number, given our mobile society. But that's the reason, and that's the background, and that's why we justified having it in there. Thank you.
Anybody else for their first time? Second time, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. The homestead implies that it's your primary residence, and we still have that qualification in the bill. I think that addresses that issue. I don't think anybody's going to move to Wyoming for a $258 credit on their taxes, so thanks.
House Bill 68, having been read three separate times. Oh, I'm sorry. All those in favor of third reading amendment number one to House Bill 68, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion passed. Now, House Bill 68, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson. Aye. Bagby. Aye. Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger. Blake.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Hilders.
Aye.
Cohey.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Dirks.
Aye.
Edmonds.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Gilmore.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye.
Hallinan.
Aye.
Hammonds.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Aye.
Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Jorgensen.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Lubno.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
McComey.
Aye.
Mercer.
No.
Meyer.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Millen.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Patton.
No.
Peasley.
Aye.
Pedersen.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Philp. Korberg.
Aye.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Semlich.
Aye.
Shepperson.
Aye.
Stewart.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Thompson.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Wallace.
No.
Zwanitzer Dan.
No.
Zwanitzer Dave excused. Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 54 ayes, 5 noes, 1 excused.
House Bill 68, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Bill 68 has passed the House. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 231.
House Bill 231, introduced by Representative Harvey, an act relating to motor vehicle accidents, serious bodily injury, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Madam Majority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I move third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 231, and I ask for your favorable consideration. If you will please turn to page 3. My amendment deals with lines 11, 12, and 13. Well, actually, just lines 12 and 13, Mr. Chairman. I would like to delete on page 12 the word permanently. And after the word on page 13, after the word record, I would propose that we add for a period of 10 years following the conviction. Mr. Speaker, my fellow colleagues, I really felt that making this conviction for this violation a permanent part of your record was too onerous. From my standpoint, mistakes are made sometimes through no fault of our own, and to have that permanently notated on the licensee's record, I felt was too onerous, too draconian, if there's a proper word for it. So I would just urge my colleagues to, instead of making this a permanent part of the record, to make it for a period of 10 years. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. Representative Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against the amendment, I and here again, folks, it's a policy decision. Part of the reason for that being on your driver's record is to let others know that this is something that has happened in your life, that through, and it's not through no fault of your own, but through your carelessness, someone else died or was seriously hurt. And so for other people who hire you or potentially could hire you as a driver, the question is, and the decision for this body to make is, do they have the right to know the liability they're signing up for you when they hire you? It's just simply a policy decision by this body.
Anyone else for the first time? Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, on and for the amendment, and I'll tell you why. If you're going to put that notation on the driver's license, if it stays there for 10 years, it has some finite existence to it. Without this amendment, it stays on there forever. And if we're going to do that, if somebody has a right to know that you did that sometime in your life, then I think they ought to have a right to know how long ago it was and how many years it's been since it happened. And I don't see that in here. So I think the amendment is fair game. I don't think it's fair game to leave it on a person's license for the rest of their life and not tell the whole story. The whole story would be, well, it happened many, many years ago. So on and for the amendment.
Anyone else for their first time? Anyone else for their second time? Representative Korberg is the sponsor for your second time.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess I wasn't going to follow up with anything. I just urge the body to pass this amendment. I mean, this truly is a policy decision. And, you know, I can just see instances where you might even have your own child doing the driving in the vehicle. We know of a situation where that happened in Washakie County, and the parent was there in the vehicle, and the child lost control, and unfortunately, the mother perished. I just can't imagine putting this on a child's driver's license for the rest of their life, Mr. Speaker. So I really urge the body to support this amendment. Thank you.
We're voting on third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 231. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 231 has passed. Representative Landon.
Mr. Speaker, I move third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 231 and will withdraw it at the appropriate time. Ladies and gentlemen, I visited with the sponsor on this bill yesterday, and I was trying to gain a better understanding of what we're doing here. I think the best way to try to explain what my concerns are is I had a friend who was involved in a moving vehicle accident before coming down here. A vehicle had pulled out in front of her, and she had hit that vehicle and totaled her car, actually. Fortunately, no one was very seriously hurt, but I thought of that accident, and it could have had a different outcome. And if this law was in place and it had an outcome in which she was hurt, injured, then there would be a further penalty on the person who had pulled out in front of her. And I thought, well, that's curious, because a penalty then is dependent on the outcome rather than on the action that the actor made. And I thought that's kind of that in itself could be, have a lot of uncertainty in it, and that could be kind of an accidental occurrence. Whether a person was wearing a seatbelt might influence whether or not they were injured, how fast it was going, and a number of things or just where on the vehicle it was hit. If it was hit in the front quarter, no one might get hurt. If the accident by a quirk of fate happened a half a second later and is hit on the passenger side or the driver's side, then somebody could be injured, and then it would be more of a penalty than if it had happened a second earlier and it wouldn't be. And so I thought, I was just confused by this, that it's not necessarily the action that's causing the penalty, but it's the outcome. And so I just thought I'd bring that up to express some opposition to the bill. I think that if there's problems in this area, if we don't have strong enough penalties, we should probably go back and look at how we're going to rewrite this moving violation penalty. I'm just not sure that this is answering the problems that are whatever caused this bill to be brought forward.
Representative Lebno.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I hearken back to a tragic accident that happened a few years ago in my community, where a 16-year-old girl was driving. Her father was riding in the back seat of the vehicle. They were driving down the road. She went off the road, overcorrected, the vehicle rolled, the father was ejected from the back seat of the vehicle and killed. And she received a ticket for driving for too fast for conditions, which is a citation under this act. And so what are we doing here with this bill? We're bringing that girl into court, making her must appear for something that we can't impose a punishment as bad as the punishment that this girl is suffering right now, of the memories of that incident for the rest of our life. If you're a normal person, you're going to have to live with that act forever. If you're a psychopath, there's nothing we can do that's going to make any difference. And so sometimes the worst punishments aren't imposed by the state. Now, if you violate our traffic laws and it's a serious violation, we have traffic laws to address that. But just by virtue of the outcome, be it minor or large, with this legislation, we're creating some pretty serious consequences, and I think hurting folks. And so I'd urge you to think real long and hard about an aye vote on this one.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and for the bill, just to address the good representative from House District 30's concerns, you know, we have a lot of penalties and statutes that are wholly dependent on the outcome of a certain act. Any crime that you see that has the word aggravated in front of it, if somebody commits a DUI and kills somebody, it becomes an aggravated. We have an aggravated homicide by vehicle. So our statutes are replete where we determine the punishment or the potential punishment that is called for is determined by the outcome of the act or the wrongdoing. So that's nothing new. And then just to gently push back a little bit on the comments made by my friend and good representative from Campbell County, if you look at the bill, it requires that the outcome or the death be the proximate cause of the violation of law. And secondly, I want to point out that if you were to look under the penalties under 31.5.1201, that's the general penalty section of Title 31, the penalties for failure to maintain a single lane of traffic or failure to stop at a stop sign are fairly minimal. And this bill requires that act was the proximate cause of a death, and if that happens, the person can be subject to some additional, slightly more stringent penalties. But let's keep in mind on page 2, number 1, somebody died. And secondly, for a first conviction, they could be punished of a fine of not more than $500 or by imprisonment for not more than 6 months. That's less than the most common misdemeanor we have on the books, folks. And for a second or subsequent conviction, which, you know, we would pray would never, ever happen, the potential penalty, if it results in a serious bodily injury, is basically the same as the high misdemeanor we have now. That's the same penalty for possession of a controlled substance first time out of the box. But in this case, we're saying you could be punished by that penalty if, through your negligence, you kill somebody. I really don't think this is terribly onerous. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker, pro tem, could you come forward, please? Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There were some questions as to what the Judiciary Committee had done with this bill, and I was asked to explain that, so I'll just give that as information. Because it is a little confusing to read this bill to make your decision, because we had a standing committee amendment that essentially deleted almost the entire bill, and then the committee of the whole amendment came back in, creating it. Just to explain it real quick, there are two different things this bill is doing. One is requiring a must appear in court, and the other is creating the violation. The committee believed that there were some problems with the second part. The first part they agreed with, that if you're in an accident that you cause a death, that officer should probably mark must appear on your ticket. And I'm not going to say most of you, but some of you may have had the good luck of getting a ticket in your life. And they always mark must appear, or they mark you may pay a bond in lieu of. And the difficulty here was that there had been some incidences where the officer had marked that you could pay your bond and just mail it in and not appear. So that's what the first part does, is say that if you cause serious bodily injury or death, you need to appear in court and at least be in front of a judge. The second part, and the only way to see this, is if you look at the Committee of the Whole Amendment, and you'll see H right there on lines 26 through 35, that's what the bill's really doing right there. That's the gist of the bill. And I know there was some confusion, so I wanted to make sure it was understood which part of this bill we were looking at.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I understand the deep emotions that led to the good representative bringing this bill, and I agree with the feelings of that family and their loss. The must appear, I think, is a great idea, because then the person is in court. And an appearance doesn't have to be with other people. If the attorney defending the person says, we'd like to appear or have a separate appearance at 3:15 in the afternoon, there might be, the only people there might be the people that are related to that case. Yeah, there could be press. Certainly it's an open court, but court's often tough for people on a variety of issues. And at that time, the prosecutor can inform the judge about the heinous nature of the act, and the judge can sentence the person to the full penalty under the act. the enhancement of the penalty for the violation, that's the second part of the bill, gives me a little more pause in that if I were driving down the highway and a deer ran in front of me and I swerved left across the center line rather than right into the barrel pit and I hit a car and someone died in that car, and the officer investigating it thought I was negligent, I could be, if I were charged and found guilty, the judge would have no discretion. He would have to enhance the penalty for that violation under the way the bill is written. I'm not sure that that's fair. I don't want to kill this bill, and I think that if it goes to the other body, that issue could be addressed, and maybe you give the discretion to the judge to enhance the penalty like we've done with some other criminal statutes. Give that discretion, but the automatic enhancement is the one that concerns me. But I know enough about the process and have experienced it enough to know that if the sponsor of the bill went over to the Senate and said, would you please address this, we'd see a little different bill back if it passed over there and came back for conference report. Thank you. Anyone else for their first time? For your second time, Representative Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There are some issues that I would like to discuss. When the good representative from Sheridan County talked about the result of the accident, I'd like to talk about that. Serious bodily injury, as defined in the statute, means bodily injury which creates a substantial risk of death or which causes miscarriage, severe disfigurement, or protracted loss or impairment of the function of any bodily member or organ. That's about as close to death as you can come and not achieve it. And I guess I am speaking for the families of people who were killed in car wrecks. When they feel that justice is not served, when they feel that nothing is done and that their loss is not, that there's no justice under the law for them. In response to the enhancement, as the good speaker said, the enhanced penalty is up to, but not more than, $500, or imprisonment of not more than 6 months. And so even if the judge enhanced it by $1, that is acceptable. I mean, it doesn't have to be clear up to the full extent. That's why we put up to, is to give the judge the discretion to look at all of the circumstances surrounding the accident that we can't see. We only give the tools that if it is a horrible accident that it could have been prevented had the driver been attentive, it gives the judge the opportunity to serve justice. I would urge you to vote aye on this bill and let some of these families feel that justice could be served, and let the courts decide when mercy comes into play. And I just urge you to vote aye on this bill.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just wanted to make a couple of points, ladies and gentlemen. After the Judiciary Committee dealt with this bill. I worked with the good representative from the Bighorn Country and also with our law enforcement folks to come up with this new language. And I'd like to clarify some of the comments that were previously made with the example of the deer on the road. First, I don't think it's likely that you'd get the ticket for failure to maintain a single lane of traffic if indeed a deer did come on the road. Secondly, the prosecutor, there's another gatekeeping function, would have to look at this and decide if that charge was proper. And then the last thing I really wanted to address was the comment about the judge not having discretion. The way I read this bill, and on page two especially, this does not tie the hands of the judge whatsoever. The only thing this does is it expands the potential sentence a judge may give to someone under these circumstances. The judge could still, under 31.5.1201B, Romanet 1, could still sentence somebody under those provisions. This bill only says if in the judge's discretion the crime is more serious, he may go up to a potential of $500 or more than 6 months, or for not more than 6 months, or both. So he has all the discretion in the world.
Anyone else for their second time? Chairman Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We had very little discussion of this bill in first reading, and I want to thank all of those who participated in this discussion. At this moment, I will remove the amendment, withdraw the amendment.
Thank you. Third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 31 is withdrawn. House Bill 231, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson. Aye. Bagby.
Aye.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Childers. Cohey, Connolly, Kraft, Davison, Dirks, Edmonds, Esquivel, Gilmore, Gingery, Goggles, Hales, Hallinan, Hammonds, Harshman, Harvey, Illaway, Yagi, Jorgensen, Landon, Lockhart, Lubno, Madden,
no.
McKim,
aye.
McComey,
no.
Mercer,
no.
Meyer,
aye.
Miller,
no.
Millen,
no.
Moniz,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Peasley,
no.
Pedersen,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Philp,
no.
Korberg,
aye.
Roscoe,
no.
Semlek,
no.
Shepperson,
no.
Stewart,
no.
Stubson, Teeters,
aye.
Thompson,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Wallace,
no.
Swanitzer Dan,
no.
Swanitzer Dave, excused. Mr. Speaker,
aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Connolly, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 34 ayes, 25 noes, 1 excuse.
House Bill 231, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Bill 231 has passed the House. We're at that order of business of bills on consideration on We're at consideration of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, we've got a little over 60 bills on general file. And as of this morning, we've got 152 bills in committee. Today and through Monday, we need to hit our marks and say our lines. And with that, Mr. Speaker, I move that the House resolve itself into committee of the whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Motion carries. We are resolved into general file. Representative Carson.
Committee of the whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 114. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 114, introduced by the Education Committee, an act relating to community colleges.
Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report, that it do so with the recommendation that bill number 114, House Bill number 114, do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. Do you want to do yours now?
You've heard the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Or discussion, excuse me.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, excuse me. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to divide the amendment if I could, and I understand that there are 150 bills here. I'd like to divide the amendment, page 1, lines 1 to 45, page 2, lines 1 to 47, page 3, lines 1 to 46, page 4, lines 1 to 29, page 4, lines 42 to 47, and page 5, lines 1 to 7 would be division 1, the rest would be division 2.
Chairman, the clerk has asked that you repeat that a little bit more slowly for everybody, and after that, maybe a discussion on what the intent is, so I can rule that this is divisible. Chairman?
Mr. Chairman, what this division does is there's an amendment that adds an optional tax. And my objection isn't so much to the amendment, but to the manner in which it was brought. We had a task force that studied community college amendments. And then through the amendment process, we added a tax and changed the structure and the taxation structure without a great deal of hearing or representation. It came on as an amendment, and I have a concern that it's a process concern, that the tax should go through the regular process, be heard by the Revenue Committee, have input from everybody involved, rather than the subject of a whole entire bill being included as an amendment to a bill. And so that's why I'm on and against Division 1. But I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, we haven't even, I guess, ruled that that's divisible yet. And I can get, Mr. Chairman, I can give you those divisions again very slowly. It's all of page 1, all of page 2, all of page 3, page 4 from lines 1 to 29 and 42 to 47, and then page 5, lines 1 to 6.
The chair rules that this is divisible. Go ahead, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I think I've already on and against Division 1, and for the same reasons that I just stated.
Discussion on the first division. Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and in favor of Division 1, and I'll briefly explain what the division does. It is rather lengthy and complicated. Essentially, I bring the amendment to the Standing Committee because we have spent 2 years and hundreds of thousands of dollars in the interim, and we have never dealt with funding and governance when it comes to community colleges. And I think this is a good discussion that we need to have on this floor. I don't think procedurally it's out of line. It was my only opportunity to bring this amendment. We did take testimony in committee on it. And so I'll begin. I'll proceed through the amendment and try and explain briefly what it does. It is not a tax. It is an optional tax. And it allows the service areas in those community college districts to exercise the option of an additional 1 mil. We've had the discussion about 1 mil for community colleges on this floor several times, and it never has gone anywhere because we were forcing it and because we didn't provide representation. This amendment provides representation to those local boards, and it allows the voters to decide whether or not they want to exercise their option to levy that tax. So the way the amendment works is that if you live in a community college district or in a service area in a community college district, you can choose to choose the option of an additional mil. If you choose that additional mil, you get a corresponding seat on that local corresponding community college district board. A lot of the language on page 1, 2, and 3 are just conforming amendments that we always use when we're setting up an optional mil levy. The way the money would be treated is that if that
county chooses to exercise that optional mill, it'll be treated as the four mills from the home district. So the actual obligation of this legislature to fund community colleges in the model that we have will be decreased substantially if we adopt this amendment. I think we've got a lot of positive response from the community colleges. I haven't heard anything negative from them, but we can have the discussion right now, I think, and this is the appropriate venue to do so. And I would stand for any questions.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would encourage the body to vote no on this amendment, primarily for the same reasons that were initially expressed, but also for this one. While this puts the cart ahead of the horse, big time, because what you have here is the authority to put a vote before the people for a tax, but it does not sufficiently address the governance issue. Let me give you a clear example. Should this pass, those counties that are in the service districts would get one person on that college trustee board. In the particular case of the county that I reside in, which is in a service district of a community college, along with one other county, should the one mill pass, the voters, the one mill of Campbell and Johnson counties will create more actual revenue than the entire four or five mills that are assessed in Sheridan County. And for that, we get one representation on the board. I find that inherently unfair and would speak against this.
Representative Bechtel.
Mr. Chairman, could I interrupt you just for a moment for privilege of the floor?
Go ahead, Representative Brechtel.
Mr. Chairman, we've got Paradise Valley fifth grade class with their teacher, Mr. Carlson, up here in the balcony, and they're only going to be here for a few minutes. Sorry about the interruption, but glad to have them here.
The chair also welcomes you. All right. Looks like we're back to Representative Teeters. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would just like to respond to the concerns from Campbell County. Currently, they are not paying a mill. That is correct. But currently, they also do not have any representation on the community college board. So I would suggest that one mill is not onerous and it is not burdensome. And for the services that they're receiving in that county, I think it is completely appropriate.
Representative Jorgensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's true, as the bringer of this amendment states, it's true, as the amendment that is being brought states, or as the speaker states, it's what we're doing is not we have not addressed funding and governance, and having been on the latest community college task force and having been named to the new advisory board or committee overseeing the establishment of strategic plans, statewide strategic plan, for those colleges, I will admit that neither funding nor governance has been fully addressed. Those are questions that everybody runs from asking. And I'm perfectly willing to ask them and attempt to answer them. The first answer is what we have now is a very illogical system in both categories, funding and governance. And you cannot isolate one and resolve it without involving the other. The strategic plans are to be developed before next fall. They will weigh heavily in the considerations of the development of next year's budget. I believe they should result in changes in the funding system. It's what we have is just not fair, it's not correct, it's not equitable. The governance is also an important question. We have local boards of trustees, and a state board or commission. And we will get that worked out. The strategic plan statewide, identifying the state's interest, is the most important element in proceeding with any of those. Each college is different. Their districts are different. Their districts are not logically developed or identified, and that will be taken care of. I urge us, I appreciate bringing up the question in this way, but I think if we can be patient for another round, we'll get a lot closer to a solution. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for the body's information, the task force was funded for 2 years, and the task force felt that they didn't have time to deal with this issue that this particular part of the amendment is dealing with, and it was going to be studied in the coming year if the task force is continued. It has been funded. It's up to leadership to decide if they want to continue the funding or to continue the task force, but that was one of the issues that was to be dealt with next.
Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Preceding this year's task force, I was on the task force the year before that, which was the Governor's Blue Ribbon Task Force dealing with community colleges. And one of the things that our committee discovered was that in the United States, there are only two principal ways of funding community colleges. One is you raise revenue, and in fact it is a true community college. It just serves that area. And in fact that's what Wyoming has, is that you raise the revenue locally in one community. Then there's the other model in which you equally assess mills across a service region, and everyone in the service region equally pays for that community college and paying for services in that district. When we asked our consultant about the United States, were there any states which allowed for a variation in the taxes assessed? In other words, a county that would pay more than another county. And in fact, there is no state that has a mixed system. Now, I'm not saying that that is not where we will not end up, but in fact, it's a very complex choice. It would make Wyoming unique in trying to come up with a system like that. And I agree with the previous speakers in that it's a complex one in which we want to take a full approach versus an individual bringing an amendment. I also want to commend the bringer of the amendment in that I think we'd all like to solve this quickly, and we know that this may be part of our final solution, but in fact it is very, very essential that we fully analyze all of the repercussions and that we also realize that we don't want to further complicate the system we have today by adopting things before we're really fully aware of what it is that we're doing. And for that reason, I stand opposed to Division 1 of the amendment.
Chairman Elloway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, several years ago, I brought a bill that tried to make it so that it was a statewide system. And the task force promised we're going to study it. You know, we've been studying it, it seems to me, for a number of years. It's high time that we got going on it. This thing of we'll study it next fall. I suspect by the time I retire, whenever that is, we'll still be studying how to fund community colleges statewide. I've talked to the Community College Commission. I have talked to various presidents of community colleges, and I will still go to their reception and probably get chastised, but it's high time we stopped studying and got busy to figure out how to fund statewide community colleges. There are 7 community colleges, and there are 23 counties. And those 23 counties all reap benefits from those 7 community colleges. But those 16 counties are not necessarily helping to fund those 7 community colleges, and they are sending students there. I commend the bringer of this amendment. I think it's a good start. And I think if we don't go ahead and pass this amendment at this time, we're going to continue studying. And I suspect you freshmen will have an ample opportunity to look at this down the road
because if we don't get it done here, it will not get done. On and for the amendment.
Thank you. Representative Hallinan.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I speak against this amendment, though I think it's a worthy thing for us to have some conversation on here today. It appears that this concept was the subject of a joint interim committee meeting. This amendment apparently either was not brought there or was not accepted there. Yeah, it was a study, and the study hasn't fully addressed this question. I think a matter that is this complicated actually does need time, and it needs to have compromise from a lot of different stakeholders. And I think we should give those stakeholders the chance to address this issue. Perhaps that would be best done in another interim study, but sometimes that's what it takes. You just don't pick something and do it just so you do it. You try to do it right. So I'm against this amendment or this division of the amendment, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On in support of the amendment, to echo the words of the good representative from Laramie County, the chairman, I think a lot of our frustration with this study group, and they brought us some good work, but they didn't address the most pressing issue. I think the pivotal point to all of this is always going to be the funding. And while it might be the most sensitive point, it's the one that really needs to be worked out. So when we say they need more time, what's obviously implied in that is they're going to need more money. Every time we study something and we study a little more and we study a little more, it's going to need more appropriations to keep studying it. I don't think there's anything wrong with this body taking up difficult questions. And quite frankly, this amendment, the concept isn't that difficult. That's what we're here to do, is discuss it and to talk about it. When we put it off and study it and study it and study it, it just takes more time and more money. We need a solution to this problem. I personally am in agreement with the solution in this amendment. I don't think there's any problem with us talking about it and coming up with a solution here. On and for the division on this amendment.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just some curiosity questions, because I don't quite understand this concept. I live in one of the communities that I guess we're a service area, we don't have a community college in my area, but we are serviced, I guess, by one of the community colleges. I guess my first question is, why would my community ever vote yes when I'm getting the service already for free? If I'm getting it for free, why would I vote to tax myself because they're already providing it? So that was my first question. My second question is, does anyone know who picked that we had to go with that community college? There's actually one a little bit closer to us. Why did we get stuck in their service district? Do we have a choice in picking a new service district? And then my last question is, instead of doing it this way, why don't they just, are they allowed, these community college districts, to expand their boundaries and just annex in other counties? So then we would actually fully be a district within the district instead of this concept of service area. Just my curiosity questions.
Representative Corbett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, first of all, in response to some of, I feel probably is criticisms and concerns about the work that the task force did this summer, understand that this bill is a direct result of the work that this task force did this summer. And we did have to prioritize the issues that we dealt with. We didn't want to spend all summer in interim and come to you with absolutely no bill because our plate was too full and we couldn't adequately deal with all of the subjects that were given to us the first go around. So that being said, one of our highest priorities was, number one, was to define what are the state's interests. And that speaks directly to, how are we accountable? How are the community colleges and that system going to be accountable to all of the state money that is going into the community college system right now? And the second thing that was of significance to us when we decided the priorities we were going to work on, when we started this project, when the session was over with last year, we were anticipating, almost a $900 million unanticipated revenue or surplus. And we had already gone down the path of starting to fund capital construction for the colleges. So immediately one of our concerns became, how are we going to deal with future requests for capital construction from the community colleges? And we chose that as one of our priorities. We also chose, how are we going to deal with the funding model? Because there's been quite a bit of concern over that. So we did limit what we felt we could do. We wanted to bring you something this year that said, we looked at these were our priorities for this session, we wanted to bring you a good bill. We were very aware that we had not yet dealt with where is the money going to continue to come from, and should the other 16 counties have to pony up to the plate and help fund the community college system. So that being said, I'm going to encourage you not to support Division One. I do appreciate the sponsor of the amendment and wanting a discussion about it on the floor. I don't think this discussion has even been fully vetted. As my good colleague from Teton County just said, why would we opt to pay for anything when we're already getting the service? Those of us, you know, I think there's some discussion about the level of service that we're actually receiving. It's more than just getting a seat at the table. So my good colleague from Goshen County knows how I feel about this situation. If it were up to me, the tax would indeed be optional, but each county would be allowed to take the money that they raise with that mill levy, decide what they want to get for their money, and be allowed to go out with an RFP to any of the 7 community colleges and get the most we can for our money. So there's a lot of innovative ways of thinking about this. If it were up to me, service districts would no longer exist in the state of Wyoming. So I don't think we fully thought this all the way through. I think this summer is another opportunity to take this issue up, so I'm on and against the amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Why would a county choose to tax itself by a mill? Well, it is as simple as it may be the opportunity to have a seat on the board and participate in the governance of a community college in which they're a part of their service area. And I support taxation with representation. However, at this time, there is a concern that I have about this manner of extending a service area into a county into a college district area. And it is this, and it's a concern that's been raised by my county, by my community college at home. Should that revenue supplement the college budget and college operations, or should it supplant, in other words, offset by the money from the state? The concern is this. In my particular area, a county may not even be contiguous to the community college. If that county should choose to become a part of the college district, there's a lot of responsibility and cost to the college to extend itself to that county. And so that's an issue that I think that hasn't really been well addressed, and I agree with those who say this may be a time that is not yet come. Opposed to the division, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, on and for the division, and for a couple of reasons. I'd like to bring us back on point on really it's an option to let people decide whether to tax themselves to provide more services. Secondly, as far as districts not, I think the statute already says that they must be contiguous with the county. I think that's right, and perhaps somebody can correct me on that. But I guess why it brings me back to this, and we've had this discussions over and over, but we had the discussion of the facility at the Gillette campus of Sheridan College, now called Gillette College, where the state, I think, kicked in $17 million, and then it was matched by local folks in Campbell County. They ended up paying a little over $17 million, I guess. But my point in all that debate, when it came to us, and we were flush with money, so we approved it as a legislature, but you know, if the folks in Gillette really wanted that service, I mean, they could pass a mill and probably fund that baby in like 48 hours or something. And so I think this gives our folks an opportunity to say, we want this service. Let's enter into this agreement. Put this to the ballot to the people. And we always get nervous. And I understand that's our deal, to kind of hold the line on this tax so something couldn't get carried away. But
you know, I think that's part of the deal. We let folks vote for that to provide a service. So on and four. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Jorgensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With regard to those comments, I'd just like to say a proposal or an encouragement to put the question to the voter puts the question to folks who have not heard the arguments, not heard the discussions, and in effect preserves the status quo of funding with a little variation and governance. And those things need to be changed. There's, number one, we have, I should never say this, but we have too many counties. It just encourages parochialism without a foundation for that in issues like this. The community colleges are to serve the state. The challenge that was given to the last committee or task force by the governor was identify the state's interest in the community college services. And that's what the commission is now charged with doing with the assistance of each college. That has been funded in a bill before you this year. And that's the consultant's been hired. That will be completed. That will give us a good basis for rational discussion of both elements of the community college issue. I urge the defeat of this amendment, this division of this amendment, and in fact the entire amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chairman Lebnow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I commend the representative from District 5 for bringing this amendment. I think this is a discussion we need to have, and I admire his courage and fortitude in doing it. It's not so much the concept I worry about. It's the process. It needed to be a bill. We needed to have hearings on it. We needed to have input from interested parties. And everybody who's affected needed notice and an opportunity to be heard. This is an optional plan. But if we get it in place with the option now, and then we want to change things to a better plan, all of a sudden we've been taxing, we're locked in, we don't know where the money goes, we don't know how it's administered. Is this the best plan? We don't know. Do we need a new governance structure that we can apply over? We don't know. My concern is a process concern. Let's not paint ourselves at a box. It's something that I tell my son is don't jump at the first thing, jump at the best thing. And this process through an amendment, I don't think is bringing us all of the considerations to the table that we need to discuss with this, and so on and against the division.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to have the last word since this was my amendment, and I will call for the question. But I don't think anything in this paints us into a box. We have the prerogative to change our mind at any point, and I'm following the process that I was duly elected to do. I have every right to come before this body and suggest that this is the direction that we should go. And you have every right to say no or yes. So I don't want to get into the argument of whether or not this is procedurally correct, because there's nothing about this that is incorrect procedurally. Back on the amendment, I believe that this is a very ginger step towards making a system that will actually cause some buy-in for the rest of the counties. It is optional. We are not requiring that anyone have to pay this if they don't want to. If they choose to pay it, they get a seat at the table. I think that's perfectly reasonable. We've had some comments from people on the floor about why would I want to have to pay a tax if I'm getting the services for free anyway? That's a perfect example as to how screwed up the system is right now. This takes us in the direction that I believe we need to go. If we want to change it in a year or 2 years, that is our prerogative, and I would urge the body to vote aye on the amendment. Thank you.
Chairman Childers.
Mr. Chairman, being fairly familiar with the special district process, if I understand this right, you know, the whole issue of allowing things to be taken to the vote of the people concerning a mill levy, even though it's a small mill levy, is the petition process allows going to owners, even though there's some question about in the petition process whether the mineral owner is an owner. Most of us feel like that they're a property owner just like anybody else is. I'll guarantee you when it comes time to paying the property taxes as part of that, and I am on and against the amendment, Division 1. What people have to realize is in that petition process, most of the special district being proposed, they go to the mineral owner and ask them if they're in support of this or not. And quite frankly, they should be on that petition because they are a property owner. They do not vote, but when the petition is finished, they take it to the county commissioners to allow it to be voted on, which is being brought up in this. And I, quite frankly, I'm disturbed about how the amendment, I'm not sure that it does circumvent the process, but on the other hand, I do feel like this ought to be discussed further and at a different time to clarify that those who pay the taxes need to be heard from, on and against the amendment.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to compliment the people in their presentation of the discussion of this. It's incredibly important, and I think the representatives, both representatives from Teton County, expressed something very, very well. There is a tie, just inherently by our very nature, between governance and funding, and how you make it equitable after 30 years of development of the community colleges is a monumental task. I don't know, my people in my area, obviously, asked me to vote for the one mill levy and the tax, and I will do so. But I want to caution us, in having said that, that does not resolve the problem that the people from Campbell County are voicing, and that is the relationship of the governance to the monetary, the funding of the community college system. So I think that we're working piecemeal, but I am going to vote for the amendment, and that division that does not preclude us, nor should we think that ends the discussion or the debate of the community college governance and funding mechanisms. We should view ourselves as looking at a continuance of the study of the community colleges and their service to this great state. Thank you.
Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, or Mr. Chairman. I was a no in the committee on this bill because, as you've heard today, this is a very, very broad-based, very complicated issue. And so I'm going to be of no again today. Thank you.
Is there a question on House Bill 114, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, Division Number 1, which is page 1, line 1 through 45, page 2, line 1 through 47, page 3, line 1 through 46, page 4, line 1 through 29, page 4, also line 42 through 47, and page 5, line 1 through 7. Is there a question?
Question
being called. You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment for House Bill 114, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, Division Number 1. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
The noes have it. We're on to Division Number 2 for House Bill 114, Division 2. Discussion. Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, with your permission, or Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I'll do the rest of the division, or the Standing Committee Amendment, as I work through the bill so that you can follow on the floor where these fit in. Is that, I think that's an easier way to do it rather than trying to talk you to you and have you flip back and forth. So that's what I'll do. And so I'll start with the bill itself. And ladies and gentlemen, this bill does three things. It addresses CAPCON, CapCon is a good question. CapCon is capital construction. The state's involvement in how we would be involved in assisting the colleges to build on their campus. That's a brief discussion of CapCon. It involves governance. How the community college would be governing the state's dollars that flow through to the community colleges. And it involves a funding formula. And that is how we derive a formula to adequately fund community colleges. Those are the three components that are in this bill. And all three of these components are being driven by a strategic plan that we voted last year in this House to take part in, to do, because we felt that we needed a strategic plan to look at and develop how community colleges in Wyoming fit into the state's interest. Every community college has their own strategic plan. This strategic plan is a statewide look at all the community colleges and how this would work for the state and how we could better assist community colleges with the state dollars. And I'll tell you one other thing before I proceed with the bill. The state assistance ranges from as much as 80% of the total amount one of our community colleges has to operate to as little as 33% one of our community colleges needs to operate on. So there's a very, very diverse number that each community college needs of the state money in order to operate and provide the goods and services to our constituents. And they do. The other thing we learned, ladies and gentlemen, we have one of the most wonderful community college systems in the United States. We also learned we have one of the best funded community colleges systems in the United States. And with that, I'll go on. On page 2 is where
we... Mr. Chairman, point of order. We're actually on the Standing Committee Amendment Division 2, so we probably better finish that while it's on the table.
I already asked permission,
okay.
Representative Teeters,
all right,
to explain it as I walk through the bill so they could follow it better.
Okay. All right.
Is that all right? With no objection?
The Chair.
Yes.
Chairman McCormick, please proceed.
Okay. And so with that, on page 2... we talk about maintenance and capital construction. And we have this broken up into sections that deal with the three that I talked to you about. And on line 21 and 20, we say that the major maintenance budget requests shall be made upon forms and in a format specified by the Budget Division of the Department of Administration and Information, Construction. And that is done by the Construction Management Division of the Department of Administration and Information. All the way through this process, A&I, as I'll refer to it, Department of Administration and Information, has a place in this. They are the ones that build our penitentiaries. They are the ones that have been working with the University of Wyoming. They have saved us millions of dollars, testimony in the task force. They have saved millions of dollars for the university and for the state of Wyoming. They've become very sophisticated. When we looked at CapCon, we said, CapCon, I've already explained the definition of CapCon to you. We said, well, do we want to create another division within the department or the college commission? We said, no. We already have a very good and very functional and efficient one in the Department of Administration and Information. So that was one of the first things that we did as a task force when we looked at CapCon. We had out in front of us an example of the School Facilities Commission. And the School Facilities Commission, some of us believe, is flawed in certain ways because it never didn't really wind up going in the direction that we had thought we were headed. And this, we learned from that and put some of that information in here. So it works, we believe it works better. But again, it's driven strategic plan. It shows that it talks about how they'll construct it, and I'm not going to walk you through the entire bill. And if you have any questions of it, why then you can ask me when I get through the bill. And it will modify. The commission already has a system of prioritizing. They have right now $141 million worth of requests that they would request state assistance for. We don't have that money. When we were doing this, as was said by a previous speaker on the other discussion on Amendment 1, the Division 1 of the amendment, there was hopes that we'd have some money to do some of these things and start right away. As we go on, that's pretty much, I think I've talked about most of this. However, there are several things that I'll just touch on quickly. Monies given by the state to the Community College Commission for capital construction could not be spent until they receive approval from the at-will people that are hired by the administration, the A&I group of people that oversee each one of these projects separately. And that's how they operate. They have one for the penitentiary. They have one for some of our other state buildings. And these people are all at will, so they're not permanent state employees. So if we don't need them, then they're not there. And you'll hear a little bit more about that on Standing Committee Amendment number 2. The other thing is that they are included from the start. We in the past, when we'd say, okay, we're going to give you some money, and we want A&I to be involved in this through stage 2. And A&I came to us with testimony and says that gives us absolutely no input and no say in what's going on. They need to be involved in all 3 of the stages of this. So that's in this part of the bill. So working with the community colleges, that's what this has done. And the university has found that very, very helpful. That was other testimony that we had. The university also said, though, that on some of their projects, they really don't need A&I because they've got a whole college full of engineers.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I just want to reiterate one important point about Section 1, Mr. Chairman, if I could.
Chairman McComey, are you finished? Would you be okay with Representative Teeter's commenting?
I would welcome his comments. He's
okay.
On the committee.
Chairman Teeter's, or Representative Teeter's.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The primary thing that Section 1 does that's different from what we do now is that we are now going to prioritize our building needs at the state level, and the Building Commission is going to actually go through with that. Right now we're doing it piecemeal. I just wanted to reiterate that for the body, that is essentially. And this all has to correspond with the state strategic plan that we're going to outline here in the next section. But I wanted to clarify that before we move on.
Chairman McComey.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And thank you, Representative. And as we go on, by the way, the Representative is going to help me with some of this explanation. As we go on through here, we now come to the strategic plan and the governance part of this bill. And powers and duties of the commission. It starts on page 9, and we go on from there. And it says that they will develop and maintain a statewide college strategic plan for the delivery of educational programs in Wyoming by each college pursuant to subsection H. And you can see subsection H. And it goes on down and approve all new programs qualifying for state funding pursuant to the statewide community college strategic plan. The strategic plan really drives this. And you'll hear later on, and you'd read later on in the bill where the strategic plan, the community colleges are included in the strategic plan. And later on, farther into the bill, it talks about it, but we won't get there. The 4 of the community colleges actually have a veto power over the strategic plan with the consent of their board of trustees if they think that if the strategic plan has not been developed in the interest of the community colleges. So we wanted to make sure that the community colleges had a place at the table, and because this is what they deal with, and this is for them. I've highlighted on page 13 a couple things I wanted to talk about. Again, it talks about the statewide priorities. And on page 3, it says, this plan shall serve as a basis for the state operational and capital construction budget requests and funding the statewide college system for the applicable biennial budget period. So we've tried to include all these, but we're also looking at the state dollars. That was what the task force was charged to do, was look at the state dollars. It also includes mechanisms within the planning process which assure statewide access to academic programs, career technical education and training programs, dual and concurrent enrollment programs, remedial and continuing education programs responding to the needs of students, employers, and the state workforce, including program access through outreach or coordinated electronic technology. We, as the state, said we need to give them some direction as what we felt was in the best interest of the state and our dollars, and this is what we came up with, and we included comments from all of business interests and all different types of groups around, really broad-based around the state. On the commission, we had the director of the state workforce and development programs. We had interest from the restaurants communities. We had interest from the technical communities. And then the benchmarks. Then we went to the benchmarks. And there were some things that there was already a set of benchmarks that they use, but there were some things that the committee said, if we're going to measure some of these things for the state's plan, we refined a little bit the benchmarks that you'll see on page 14. Then we went to the budget procedure on page 15. And in the budget procedure, we set up a system it's a two-pronged system. You have fixed costs, and you have the cost of the educating the students, the enrollment figures, all of these different types of things. And the fixed costs are so critical. If the fixed costs aren't right when we start this new baseline plan, then we could damage some of our community colleges. So what we did, we also included in there a study of to be done in conjunction. It's separate from the strategic plan that goes through and looks at all these fixed costs and makes sure that they're right and they're adequate.
Mr. Chairman.
Would you go ahead?
Yeah.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Good. Chairman. Before we get too much farther into that, I want to refer the committee of the whole back to page 11. I want to make sure everybody understands that the statewide strategic plan is going to be the driving mechanism behind everything that takes place in the community college system. If you have a program in your community college system that is determined to not be compatible with the statewide strategic plan, we are giving the authority to the Community College Commission to eliminate that program. So this is an expansion of the role of the Community College Commission, and that is something everybody on the floor needs to understand before they vote on this bill.
And Representative Chairman McComey.
Mr. Chairman, we give them the authority to not fund it with state dollars. The community colleges have their one mill that is not included in these things. They have some other costs, other things that they derive, other monies that they get, grants and various other things. If they have a program that they really want to do, and the strategic plan says, well, maybe this isn't in the best interest of this community college or for the state's dollars, that we have a better demand for it someplace else, they can continue to do that with their own reserves. Remember, keeping this in mind, we're talking about state dollars here. We're not telling these community colleges what they can do with their own dollars.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I stand corrected on that point. And one other point, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Teeters.
The difficulty, though, however, lies in the fact that it's difficult to separate those dollars. So that's something that's going to have to be worked out.
But this is an expansion in that role, and I do apologize for overstepping my speech.
That's okay. I'm Chairman McComey.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Speaker.
Because the strategic planning process gives the Commission more authority over a variety of things, are there, please point out areas in the bill, if there are any, that give greater public input or ensure that the processes are there to ensure that the additional authority that's exercised is transparent and public.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Teeters.
I believe all of that will be transparent and open. It will be similar to the actions that the board may take right now with public testimony and advertised meetings and so on. It has to be public information, but the sole power does lie with the commission to make those decisions.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you. And continuing on, we have now come, ladies and gentlemen, on page 16 of the bill, lines starting at line 18, we have now an amendment to the bill that's part of the second division. And what this did, the task force felt that we were going to build a reserve account of up to $35 million that could be used. And we thought we'd have some money that we could jumpstart this account. But what we didn't have. In this amendment, we also said the colleges right now receive $1.6 million from coal lease bonus money. And we've said that we'd like to see this $1.6 million put into this fund to help build this fund and get it up to $35 million. At the present time, it's distributed to the colleges based on their major maintenance formulas. Over and above what the major maintenance costs are, and the colleges can use those however they wanted. That was one of the things the colleges objected to in the plan, and the good representative from Uinta County offered an amendment that struck that entire section from the bills and changed the language around so that they know that isn't there now. Oops. All the language from on page 1, or page 17, 1 through 9, is now stricken. And on the other, back on 16, may, shalls were changed to may. New language was eliminated, and the old language, other language is put in to restore on page 21. That was to be restored for specific uses to the community colleges. And then we go on down, we're going on with the bill. The commission may by exception budget, and I felt that this was important because the community colleges can have an exception budget with this new funding model. And the colleges make the request, and the requests are then forwarded through the Community College Commission, and these can then to the Appropriations Committee and the Division of A&I, and then on subsequently on to the Governor. And what this does is this says all of these exception requests are for 1 year or one period of time, and they fall off of the funding model. In the past, the funding model has grown upon exception request upon exception request upon exception request. And a lot of these exception requests are for instance, a one-time program or some other things that was one time. But it stayed in there, and then when we gave them more money, it was added to that amount. And we had almost a cost-plus system going on here. So this is an important component now to the funding formula that's here. Then on
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I think, Mr. Chairman, it would be appropriate for us to talk a little bit about the variable and fixed costs that are going to be calculated on page 16. Maybe you could give, or I can give explanation either way.
Mr. Chairman, I think that'd be all right.
Go ahead. We have a request. We have some visitors here that are going to be here for a couple more minutes, and being this is a long discussion and a big bill, Representative Brechtel would like to help you get out of your seat and get some exercise and welcome some folks here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, we have another group of kids here from Paradise Valley with their teacher, Kristen Lundry, Casper, Wyoming.
The House welcomes you. Okay, Chairman McCombie, continue.
I believe the good representative over here from Goshen County was going to give a little explanation.
Representative Teeters.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we are going to be transitioning into a new funding formula, it was extremely important that we try to address the difference between fixed and variable costs, because the smaller schools have a larger amount of costs per student. And so on page 16, lines 10 through 17, we talk about how we're going to develop that, and currently we don't exactly know how that's going to come out, but it's an essential component of the funding formula that we didn't have in the past, and I think it's important for the body to note that we're going to start trying to estimate and evaluate the difference between fixed costs and variable costs. It should make the system more equitable, I believe.
Chairman McCombie.
Thank you. On page 19, line, the entire page was deleted. That was part of the talks about the 8 mil limitation. On that's existing language. That's still in statute. What was really deleted was the new language that talked about commission and funds carried forward and could be expended only for emergency needs, et cetera, et cetera. That was taken out in committee. On page 23, line 6, this is where we gave the veto powers essentially to the college commission, and we felt that the presidents weren't the proper people to make those decisions, so we amended that to say the presidents, following consultation with respective boards of trustees. So we gave the trustees the say-so in this, instead of the college, just the college presidents. They will be the ones acting for them. And on page 27, line 11, we have some amendments where we had Representative I think what I'll do here, these talk about some of the funding and the allocation funding models for these, and it's the hold harmless, and we had a hold harmless provision that you'll hear a little bit more about on Standing Committee Amendment number 2 that changed the hold harmless. It's 100% for 2 years, and then it steps down at 95% for each year thereafter, was what was amended into the bill. And with that, I'm ready for the question, if you don't have any more questions, on Standing Committee Amendment number 1, or Division number 2.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When we talk about the reserves on page 19, we're not dealing with the statutory limit that they're currently allowed to hold. Currently the way the bill is written is it would restrict those reserves to only be used for emergency needs as defined by rule and regulation. We felt that was too constrictive. That's the reason why that's coming out And if there are any other discussions about the standing committee, we'll try and answer them. There, it does quite a few different things. I hope everybody's paying attention.
Call a question on Division 2. Excuse me.
Representative Patton.
Mr. Chairman, and good to Mr. Chairman here at the committee. On the amendment on page 23, the lines 5 and 6 and 7, excuse me, where we have changed the wordage there, the college presidents will vote in behalf of the individual seven colleges. But with the advice, apparently, of that board, it just seems to me that we're doing it the wrong way. It would seem to me that the governance of these local institutions is very important by virtue of their election, and they also have a chairperson. It would seem to me that there would be more consistent with our approach to governance, that maybe the board itself would allow a representative of their choice as opposed to compelling it to be the president.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate those comments. I brought the standing committee amendment that changed it currently the way the bill is drafted. If we do not adopt the standing committee amendment, the president is the sole person to make that decision. I was concerned about the same concerns that the good representative from Sheridan has, so I included with the consent of the board, if he wishes to bring a second reading amendment to further clarify that the board can choose whoever they want, I have no objection to that.
Chairman McComey.
Well, testimony before the committee also was that the presidents are there. They're always the ones that are there speaking for their boards. There are trustees at present, but... So that was why that was like the way it was. If there's no more questions, I'd call for the question.
Question's been called. All right, we are on Division 2, House Bill 114, Division 2. And those lines include page 4, lines 30 through 41, and page 5, lines 8 through 39. All those in favor of House Bill 114, Division 2, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. Division 2 passes. Chairman Berger.
I'll try to speed it up, Mr. Chairman. I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to House Bill 114, and this has to do with the work that was done in the Appropriations Committee. And basically what this amendment does is it removes Section 6, starting on page 26 of your bill, which the good chairman discussed previously about the hold harmless clause. And I guess if you want to walk through that, but basically it takes out lines 10 through 24 on page 26, and then we start again on page 27, line 7 through 24, continuing to page 28, lines 1 through 13. So all we left in this segment is lines 1 through 5 on that section. And then the per the good chairman's recommendations, since we were not dealing with the capital construction, we removed, starting in section 7, little C, which is on page 29, the appropriation of $250,000 for the community college to assess the building needs. And then the next section, which is F, which is on page 32, we removed the $360,000, which would have been three at-will positions. And that, Mr. Chairman, is basically what the amendment does. Maybe I better continue here. Then on page 32, lines 10 through 24, yes, that's been deleted.
And then we go to page 33, delete lines 1 through 15, because that all dealt with the construction processes. And then on page 34, line 19 reflected those changes that we made. So I would ask for your favorable aye.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Teeters.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to divide the amendment. First division would be lines 1 through 11, and the second division would be lines 11 through 28.
Do you mean 12 through 28?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Just a second. The chair rules that this division is, you can do this division.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Essentially, what the division one does is it takes out the hold harmless. And that's a discussion that we need to have on the floor. It really only impacts two of the smallest community colleges, potentially. We've seen some projections as to how this funding formula is going to accommodate our colleges in the future. I realize that's difficult to do. We're all guessing as to what enrollments are going to be and how we're also going to establish fixed and real costs. But I think it's important that we leave the hold harmless in place for the two smallest community colleges because they are the ones that are essentially impacted. I do not anticipate that with the formula that the department will come up with that we will need the hold harmless, but it does, however, leave a certain level of certainty in place for those of us that have small colleges and are really impacted by swings in small enrollment. So I would urge you to vote no in Division 1.
Discussion on Division 1. Do I hear a question? Question having been called. We're on House Bill 114, Standing Committee Amendment Number 2, Division Number
point,
1.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Berger, I apologize.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. We've been discussing the division. The reason that we did this is that we think that the Appropriations Committee should hear the request from those two smaller community colleges in appropriations about their needs. And so that is why we did it this way. So I would ask for you to vote no on this.
Representative Teeters?
I mean vote.
Chairman Berger,
yes.
Are you sure what you want?
I think the House knows what I want.
Okay. Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would urge you to vote no. If we're going to create a new funding formula that is detrimental potentially to two community colleges, I don't think I want a new funding formula. I think it's perfectly reasonable to expect that we don't lose revenue under the new formula, and I would urge you to vote no.
Question? Questions haven't been called. Oh, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Chairman, can we have some more discussion about this? The two smallest districts, was it estimated how much money they would lose? Why do we need to take out the hold harmless? I guess I'm not clear as to why appropriations took that out.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Teeters.
I can't speak for appropriations. I'm assuming that because we probably will not be looking at a decrease until the next biennium, that would be their argument. But at the same time, I do believe that it's perfectly reasonable to leave a hold harmless in because that's just protecting the fact that we're not going to see a decrease in revenue. That was the intent of the process, of the committee through the process, is that we wouldn't actually have winners and losers, that everybody would be on a level playing field. And without the hold harmless, I don't think that's possible.
Chairman McCombie.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ask a question. And the estimated amount of max loss funding needed to equal 100% of the estimated base funding, one of these great spreadsheets that's hard to understand. We have one of them that projected could be $522,000 and the other $252,000. Those were the most far-reaching amounts that we could feel. In the committee, when appropriations took it off, they explained to me, because I asked the question, they said that they felt that they could, they would feel much better if they just looked at it when the budget came through and look at those and would be able to fund them accordingly, rather than a step down of 5%, which might give them more money than they actually need, if they're above the 95 or some things like that. It's just one of those things. As far as I'm concerned, it'd be to your discretion.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I understand the amendment, this division, it leaves in on page 26, it leaves in lines 10 through 24, and then it goes over to page 7 and leaves in lines 1 through 6 and then strikes everything else in this section 6. And in the language that's left on page 26, it looks like it's a hold harmless still. Shall not be less than 100% of the total amount of state appropriations. This is line 21 on page 26. During the biennial period, July 1, 08 through... Oh, so the section B is the next biennium? So I guess to clarify, Mr. Chairman, what's left in holds harmless for this biennium. What we would take out would be the hold harmless for the next biennium.
Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, in the Appropriations Committee, part of the discussion that we had was that you would have the hold harmless at 100% for the first biennium, and then what we thought is we're shortening essentially so that you don't get two biennium to get it together. We thought you get 2 years to come up with it. One of the shortfalls that you have is you have a lower enrollment specifically in one of the colleges, maybe two, but you can get at least 2 years to figure out, are you getting more people? Because you have a higher teacher-to-student ratio, so you need to figure out your funding mechanism to pay for a lot of those issues because you have lower student enrollment. We said, essentially, you can take care of that in two rather than extend this hold harmless out for year after year after year after year.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is part of the trouble that I'm having with the new funding formula, that it inherently discriminates against the smaller schools if we do not get the fixed costs right. And we don't know what the fixed costs are going to be, and it's my hope that we won't ever need to use the hold harmless. But those of us that have small schools with small enrollment, $400,000 is a lot of money, and it can really impact budgets. And I would really urge the body to vote no, and because it disproportionately hurts the small schools. Thank you.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and for my second time. In the past, what Appropriations has done is we have addressed those individual needs for the community colleges when it comes to this particular section. So I would ask the House to vote for this section.
Question having been called, all those in favor of House Bill 114, Standing Committee Number 2, Division Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? No.
No.
The Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has passed, Division Number 1. Division having been called, all those in favor, please stand. No, the standing amendment, committee amendment number 2, division 1 for House Bill 14 passes. We're on to division 2. Discussion? Question having been called. All those in favor of House Bill 114, standing committee number 2, division number 2, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? No. The motion passes. I believe we are on to a Committee of the Whole amendment. Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will withdraw Committee of the Whole amendment number 2, or number 1, because it was in the Standing Committee split number one. So it was already eliminated, so there's no need for that. It was a technical correction. And with that, I'd call for the question if there are no more questions on the bill.
Representative Stetson.
Mr. Chairman, knowing that I stand between this body and lunch, I will be brief. But the question I had, in looking at the capital construction portion of the bill, you would there was some discussion about how on curriculum it affected only those state-funded areas of curriculum. There was some ability to fund maybe other areas of curriculum outside of state funding. On capital construction, I had the same question. Does it just impact the state funding for capital construction as far as the priority? Is there still the ability to fund capital construction outside of the direct flow of state monies to the colleges?
The answer is yes. The community colleges can do whatever they want to do, and they can bond or whatever they want to do, but if they want state money to help them with it, then, of course, then this kicks in.
I have heard the question. All right. That was a fun one for the first one. So we are on the question. Question having been called, all those in favor of Representative McComey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill 114 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
The motion passes. House Bill 114 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that the House, the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again at 2 p.m.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
Do we have committee announcements?
Mr. Chairman?
What's that? Speaker Pro Tem, go ahead. I'm sorry.
The majority party will caucus on adjournment in the Hirschler building and bring your goldenrods.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Judiciary Committee, Committee Number 1, will continue to discuss House Bill 273, Duty Owed to Employees of Independent Contractors, and begin to take up House Bill 64, Co-Employee Immunity, upon adjournment this evening, about a half hour after adjournment, and we will be in B63 in the Hirschler building.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, your House, your committee number 4, Education, will take up upon adjournment tonight, probably about 10 minutes after adjournment. The following bills in room H10, House Bill 236, School Finance Instructional Facilitator Program, 248, School Facilities Remedy Criteria, 249, Public Education Accountability, 255, School Districts Kindergarten Programs.
Thank you. Chairman Landon.
Mr. Chairman, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet today at adjournment in room 302 to hear House Bill 151, Ultrasound Requirements for Abortion, and House Bill 154, Abortion Reporting Requirements.
Representative Millen.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to remind the minority party that we're meeting for our caucus at Poor Richards on right now.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee appropriations number 2 will meet tomorrow morning, Thursday, at 8 a.m. in room 204 to hear House Bill 238, Tax Fund Refund to the Elderly and Disabled, House Bill 253, Health Care Commission, House Bill 266, Cardiovascular Disease and Diabetes Initiatives. And then upon noon recess tomorrow, we will hear House Bill 299, Continuation of School Facilities Budget Process. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A reminder that the legislative prayer breakfast is at 6:30 tomorrow morning at Egg and I, and we'll have the good county commissioner from Platte County down as our speaker, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it. Please show up.
The committee of the whole will stand at recess till 2 o'clock.